Okay, so after yesterday's introduction to Mamon Hamutal, Bisafek, let's try to take some of these up. And as you'll see, right, the different mechanisms that I quickly outlined yesterday will begin to become clear in the Gemara. What I gave you, what I put in this source sheet is not one day's material, but it's certain representative sources on Mamon Hamutal. So the sugya that we're going to look at is the Gemara here on Lamed Dalet and Lamed Bet at the two dots. So the Gemara says as follows: Ze Omer Shel Avotai, Ze Omer Shel Avotai. So if you have two people who claim, whether it's a field or land, and they have no witnesses, as Rashbam clarifies, Rebein Bisvina Ben Bekarka, Ze Ein Eidu Vechazaka Laze Yoter Mize, and no one has more proof than the other, right? The sugyas we dealt with until now is someone has more proof than the other. They have a chazaka, the other person doesn't have a chazaka. Now, no one has more proof than the other. No one's been squatting on it, but Gavi and Yaakov claim that this is their ancestral inheritance. But no one has been living there for a while. It's been empty and fallow. Okay. So, what do you do? So, Amar of Nachman kol di'olim gvar. So, Nachman says, whoever is stronger wins. Kol di'olim gvar. Whoever is stronger wins. Rami hates this answer. Good. So now the Gemara says, why is that your preferred solution? We know that there are other solutions to cases of Mamona Mutal B'Safek. Umayishna Mishnei Shtarot Hayotzim B'Yom Echad. Why is this different from two documents that come out in the same day? What does that mean? They have the same deed, same day. Right? All right, look at Rashbam. Lefanenu al sadeh achad shel Reuven. Shekatav shtar matana l'shimon u'shtar matana l'levi. There is Reuven's field, and both Shimon and Levi have a deed that says, we got this as a present, or we bought it on January 1st, 2021. Shnei shtar yotzim b'yom echad. V'nimsa yoter mizeklal. Which means that neither one has a greater claim than the other because they both have a star from the exact same day and they both admit that they didn't own it before then. And the Rashbam clarifies, as appears in the original case, it doesn't matter if it turns out that one of them got the star in the morning and the other got the star at night. It doesn't matter. Ein hakdama b'sha'ot. The halacha is that, as the Gemara says in Ketubah, that we paskin, besides from Yerushalayim, Ein Hakdama B'Sha'ot. What does Ein Hakdama B'Sha'ot mean? There's no relevance. There's no relevance. We don't give priority based on the hours of the day. It's whatever it says in the star. The star says January 1st, so that's what it is for everybody. El Yerushalayim, except for Yerushalayim, Gedamrin B'Ketubah, Gabehu Uvda, Di'ime, Derami Barchama, B'Tzafra, Katvinu L'Nechse, Derami Barchama, Uberam Chakadinu Limar Ukva Barchama of Ukme Biyadrav Ukva Avabisha Hu Acharon Mishamaitaima Adjushaim Yatva Zakotin showed. And Ray brings a case where it was like this and they gave it to the person who had it second. The Kamishal Pairs of Ruben the Shimon Hasha Asim, it doesn't explicitly say an hour. Nimsashal Zubiktav Ze Ada Erev. It means that the star doesn't take effect till night. Vilon Paris Lasha Shachan Zushnaim Shavin, and therefore they are equivalent. And in that case, there was a machloket. Rav and Shmuel debate about how to deal with it, but neither of them endorse kol d'olim gvar. What do they endorse? Dirav Amar Yachloku. What did Rav say? Split it. Ushmuel Omer Shuda d'dayane. And Shmuel said, whatever Shuda d'dayane means exactly, we'll get to it, but leave it up to the judges. I let them choose. So the Gemara answers, Hatam lekam lemekam ala demilta. Hacha ika lemekam ala demilta. There, something, 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 we can prove it. Here, something, something, we can't. And we'll have to get into what that means exactly. We can, okay? We'll see. Okay. Then we'll see. The Gemara asks again, what's the difference between this and a case of people who trade a cow for a donkey? V'yolda, and it gives birth. Or someone who sells his maidservant and she gives birth. And ze omer atshelo macharti yolda. And one says the birth happened before the transference of property, and therefore the child is the first owner's. And the second one says from it, the birth was after the transference of property, and therefore the second person owns it. Yachloku, and we say divide. So the Gemara answers, Hadam lahai itle jara de mamona, lahai itle jara de mamona. There is jara de mamona, which is a phrase we're going to have to try to clarify, as we'll see. Hacha idemar lo demar videmar lo demar. Here it's one or the other. It's either his or his, and they are mutually exclusive. Okay, let's stop there for a minute. So, as we mentioned yesterday, the principles of how to deal with mamona mutal b'safek, what are the principles that we have in the Gemara? This Gemara has three in play, though there is a fourth. Right, what are they? Gladiatorial fighting, sure. Called alim gvar, whoever stronger wins. Shuda didaine, which is leave it up to the judges. Again, we'll have to clarify what that means. And yachloku, divide. Okay? And what we need to do is figure out, in general, what guides these principles, and in specific, why different shitot endorse different principles in different cases. So let's, before we do that, let's just get our terms straight. So here in what I put on the first few sources here, the overview, let's just see what the Mishnayot are that are being invoked by the Gemara. So the first two Mishnayot here are from Bava Metzia. You know, as you look at the second source, first look at Bava Metzia, first Mishnah. This is the beginning of Bava Metzia. Who remembers learning Bava Metzia in school? We said not everyone did. But who learned the first parak of Bava Metzia at some point? No, really? None of you? Shnayim Ochzin Betalit. Or Shnayim Ochzin Betalis. Okay. So the first Mishnah on Bava Metzia, Shnayim Ochzin Betalit. If two people are holding on to a garment, Ze Omer Ani Mitzatia. One says, I found it. Ze Omer Ani Mitzatia. I figured one of you had to cover it at some point in school. Ze Omer Ani Mitzatia. And the other one says, I found it. Ze Omer Kula Shali. Ze Omer Kula Shali. This one says, it's mine. This one says, it's all mine. Yeah, this was the theme of the Gush Purim Spiel a few years ago when they were doing Bava Metzia. They made a parody of Frozen, of Let It Go, which in Hebrew is Ta'azov, about this, which is a whole dramatic, you know, full music video of people fighting over a talis, including Kol Dala Gvar scene in it, where they're fighting over it, wrestling each other to the death to for this talis, and yeah. But yes, in Hebrew, let it go is ta'azov. You know, it's not quite as high-pitched when it's two yeshiva guys singing it in a Purim spiel as, what's her name? Edina, what is it? Right. I was like, Ming, it's the Hebrew is definitely Edina, right? But whatever. Yeah, at some point someone explained to me why that song is unique, because it's follows, I remember when I was in Gush, one of my friends explained to me that it's a different type of music. It follows the Jewish, like classic Jewish music, which borrows from like the Baroque period or something in terms of how it uses notes. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. This is not my, anyways. So what do you do? So the Mishnah says, Ze yishba she'en lo pachot mechetzia. Ze yishba she'en lo pachot mechetzia. Each of them has to swear that they own no less than 50%, because we can't make them both swear that it's all theirs, so that would be ridiculous. But we don't want them to swear that each of them only own half, because they both claim they own everything. So we make them both swear that they own no less than half. This is how rabbis think. Yes? And then, v'achloku, and they divide it. And then the Gemara tells you, you know, it's a wonderful case, but what if it's not that? Ze omer, kula shali, v'zomer chetze shali. What if one says he owns half, and the other claims he only owns a half? Sorry, one owns, claims he owns everything, and the other claims he owns a half. So then what? Ha'omer kula shali yishba she'en lo ba'pachot mishlosha chalakim. The one who says he owns everything claims he doesn't own less than 3/4, because half of it is not in question, so half of it goes to him, and the other half, they have to fight over. So he says, I own no less than 75%. Ve'omer chetze shali yishba she'en lo ba'pachot mirevia. And the one who says he owns half claims, swears he may owns no less than 1/4. And then, no, there's shlosha chalakim, then no, the ravi. And then one takes 3/4, one takes 1/4. Yes.
Is there anything?
Is there anything? Yes.
So you can't be like, I know the whole thing.
No, you can never lie in court. You can never, but shua makes it worse to fear. You know, when you swear, that's when we give you the whole nightmare. You know, the Gemara and Shavuos outlines what we tell him, that the whole world will falter and all the cosmos will cease to exist in the sin of false vows and things like that.
What happens if he over, like, what if he, like, he goes to court and he, like, you said, I swear, I really say, I don't have to. Like, can you then make him swear that is?
If he jumps in and says, I swear I owe him? Yeah. Anyways, so that's right, one classic case of Yachloku, right? Is a case of Zelmer Kula Shali v'Zelmer Kula Shali. Okay? If you look at the number 2 here, this is a mission on the 8th paragraph above a Metziah. This is the one that's invoked by our Gemara, which is Hamachlif para bechamor. If you trade, barter, right? In Halacha, one of the ways of Kenyan is Chalipin, which sometimes means a symbolic Kenyan with a sudar, right? Like, if you've ever been to a wedding, you've seen this, if you pay attention at all, which I've gathered no one does, but that's okay. Okay, I didn't ask you if you've been to more funerals, but I didn't ask you if you've ever been to a wedding and ever noticed what goes on there at the chazan's dish. So if you'll see that the rabbi at some point will give the chazan something, a pen or a shoe or whatever, and make a symbolic Kenyan. Yes, I've been to a wedding where they used a shoe, just because that's what it says in Rus. In Rus, because in time of Tanakh, they used to use shoes. Right? What? They did not use a chalitza shoe. They just used a shoe. They used a shoe. What? No, you hand a shoe. You do a Kenyan chalipin. At Yaakov Miller's wedding, right, Wiener wanted to use a shoe. I think we did use a shoe. I was in Egg Suba? What was I? Maybe I was an egg stupid, and we used a shoe. Might have used a shoe. Yeah, anyways. But I think we used a shoe there. What? So sometimes we do that, right? A symbolic Kenyan to... Oh, has it used in the wedding? Oh, that's to a point, right? A shliach on behalf of the woman as you're signing the suba. And to be mocked in the ksuba and things. What? It's not there. And the chazan's dish. You do different things. You also want to own, you might do one to own the yichud room, right? Because the chazan's on the yichud room, and if his parents are playing for the wedding or something, then you gotta, you know, do a chalipin on the room. Whatever.
When does
it happen? Usually during the shmorg, before the chuppah. Yeah, you're signing the ksuba in advance. Well, if he's fasting, he's not eating. Everyone else is eating. Yes, that's the deep dark secret. Is what there are people doing in the yichud room? And the answer is, for the most part, they're probably, you know, at least in big part, they're eating, because if they've been fasting, then... it's a minag, which, it's a minag. Because the Chazal compare the Yom of the Yom Chatunato to Yom Kippur, because you're, it's Mishchaper and Avono, so people fast. Not everyone does it. It's a minag. Some do, some don't. Some people will do it unless there's any excuse in the world not to. What? No. So look, if you're someone who's going to be sick, some people will say, oh, it's the minag. Or if it's Rosh Chodesh or any other possible day when you don't like say tachanun on that thing, you know. So, yeah. What? Yeah, I don't know if the yard site thing, I don't know what, you know. Anyways, so, but another type of chalipin is a trade, as a barter, okay? So, hamachliv para b'chamor v'yolda. So you, right, again, this is the case on the Gemara, if you trade, you barter. So in general, and by barter, once you switch one animal for, right, once you get the animal, the other one, right, the switch happens legally, right? Even if you haven't yet actually physically done the acquisition on both animals, right? Once you do one, it, right, that's why it can be confusing, right? That's exactly, the reason that it has to be this case is simply because that's what makes it confusing, is, right, is Ezra and I are trading cows for donkeys, right? So let's say you pull the donkey, right? That's one of the kinyanim, right? To pull an animal, right? So now the cow isn't present, right? It doesn't need to be present, right? So that's why you don't know when the cow gave birth. That's the problem, right? Before or after you pulled the donkey. What? Yeah, right, we have all these, exactly, right, this is where we have all these cases when we just don't know when an animal is born. So he says, v'chein ha-mocher shichato v'yolda v'zem ra'ashlo macherti v'zem yishir lakachti, same as with a maidservant, right, if you buy a maidservant who's pregnant, you don't know when she gave birth, ze omer mishir lakachti, right, yachloku, so you split it. If you have two servants, slaves, one big, one small, or two fields, one big, one small, if one says, I bought, the buyer says, I bought the big one, and the other one says, I'm not sure, so then we give it to him, right? If it's, I know that I bought that one, the other one says, I don't know, so fine. If the seller says, I only sold you the small one, and the buyer says, maybe, I don't know, so we give him the small one. But Zelmer Gadol, Zelmer Katan. But if the seller says, I sold you the small one, and the buyer says, I bought the big one, Yishba Amocher Shakatan Machar, Zelmer Enio, sorry, Zelmer Gadol, Zelmer Katan, Yishba Amocher Shakatan Machar, so then the mocher has to swear, if neither of them knows, then you just split the difference. Yes?
Why do you specifically have the mocher swear that the palm is supposed to having the person's body?
Because normally, if we can, all biblical shvuot are what's called nishba v'niftar. Right, is that you swear to exempt yourself rather than swear to take. Right, that's the standard type of shua. There are some rabbinic exceptions, but the standard type of shua is always nishba v'niftar, not nishba v'notel. Right, so he is swearing to keep, right, to not have to give the bigger one.
And so, would you say that, like, the cow will not be
Well, let's see, right? The Gemara, one second, right? Meaning that's what the Gemara, remember, is trying to compare them. So just let's get the cases down. Then the third case the Gemara analyzes, which we have in our Gemara as well, but I put it here from Ksubos, is the Shnei Shartz Yotzim Echad, Rav Amar Cholkin, Shmuel Amar Shudu Dedaine, right? And then the one case which is not dealt with in our Sugya at all, but just so you have it, look at the Mishnah number 5 here. This is from the third paragraph of Bava Metzia, is the case of Munach HaShe'av Eliyo, where Shnaim Shiftido Eitzel Echad, if two people entrust their item to someone, Zemana V'Zematai, this one puts $100 and the other one puts $200. Zelmer Shalimatayim and Zelmer Shalimatayim. And they both claim that they were the ones who left $200. Notin Lazemanav Lazemanav Ashar Yemuna Khachiyavu Eliyahu. Each of them takes $100 and the third $100, because I know all of you are very good at math, so this is very simple mathematics, right? There's a $100 and a $200, the $200 get redivided, there's $100 left, really not difficult. The third $100 is left till Ad Bias Gael Tzedek, right? Until Mashiach comes, until Eliyahu comes to deal with it. Amr Rabbiosi, Rabbiosi says, Im Kain my Hivsid Ramai. Rabbiosi says, I don't like that. You know why I don't like that? Because what is the liar going to lose out on? He said, you're encouraging. What are you encouraging? This is very simple game theory. I know that I can't leave with less than I came in with, but I have a chance at getting an extra 100. You leave 100, I leave 200, or vice versa, right? I know that the worst that can happen is that I leave with the 100 that I put in. Well, I don't know that. That's only if you challenge me, but maybe you forgot, and maybe you'll let me keep it. I don't know yet what's going to happen. So I can't get less than 100, but maybe I'll luck out, and you'll forget how much money you left here. Right? Or I don't know the halacha. I don't know they won't give it to me. I don't know that, right?
But,
so...
I mean, if you don't know the halacha, then punishing them isn't
the... Fine, but Rabbi Yossi assumes that the guy basically figures he has nothing to lose. He can't go under what he already put in. So he says, if you let him do that, so then my hipster ramai, elal kol yemuna chachiyav olio. What you have to leave is leave the whole thing. Leave the whole thing. And no one gets any money. Right, which is harsh for the person who's telling the truth, right? But it's meant to motivate the liar to not lie. Okay, so those are the rules in play. Yachloku, called alim gvar, shud de daine, and munach ad sheyavo elio. Okay, now again, let's review what we saw yesterday. What we suggested yesterday was that there is a balancing act here. That the factors in play, broadly speaking, are a commitment to truth and justice, a commitment to peace, and a commitment to making sure that life can move on after this court case. Right? And we said at first glance, Yachloku is most prominently about peace and seems to be willing to give up on the possibility of strict justice, though as you saw in the Mishnah on Bava Metzia, is there a nod there towards truth? Even before we get into the Rishonim, in the simple pshat of the Mishnah, is there a nod towards truth in Yachloku?
Yeah,
what is it? Yeah, and what? But what do they swear? As opposed to doing what? Or all. Meaning, right? Meaning, we don't just let them swear their actual claim, right? Because then you would lead to a contradiction. The court would be saying, okay, both swear knowing that one of them is lying. Right? So what we do is, yes, the result may not be true, but we'll see whether that's the case, but by making them swear ainli bapachot mechetzia, We're at least trying to minimize, right? We're trying to maximize the truth value here, right? Because at least they both, right? Our adjudication will be not impossible, because all they actually swore to is that they have no less than half, and we're giving them no less than half, no more than half either, right? But there does seem to be some attempt at negotiating a resolution which allows us to sort of look truthful. Yeah. Shnei Shvilin. Yeah, so in the case of Shnei Shvilin, you are correct. That we have this weird truth claim where if there are two paths, one is Tahor, one is Tameh, so if one of them comes to ask, we say Tahor. If the second one comes to ask, we say Tahor. But if they come together, then we say both Tameh, because we can't say they're both Tahor, so we have to say both Tameh, right? You can mess yourself up in cases where you can't, right, you can't make a decision that is obviously false. At the same time, that doesn't mean you can't make a decision that is overall impossible, but you can't actually issue a psak, which is, okay. But that's Yachloku. What about, at first glance, Kol Dalam Gvar, again? Right, so it maybe makes life keep going, maybe, though it's not clear, because as we'll see, it's not clear whether you can continue the fighting afterwards. Meaning, is it a one-off thing that they fight and that's it? Or do they keep fighting and, you know, the example I gave to Rami is that, right, Rami gets into a fight with Adam, right, over the item. So Rami and Adam fight. Rami wins the fight. Adam gets annoyed, goes to the gym for 6 months, and then 6 months later beats Rami and takes it back, right? Is that plausible in Kol Dalam Gvar? If yes, then this doesn't even seem to let life keep going, right, because it just encourages chaos for all of eternity. Right, but if it's a one-off thing, so then maybe at least it works on the life level, right? It just it makes a decision, we move on. Peace, it's not. Truth, we'll see. Depends how you conceptualize it, right? Meaning it's not problematic because Beis Din isn't actually making a decision that contradicts truth, but it's not clear it's facilitating justice either. The Rosh will think it is, but we'll see. Right.
So if they don't think they're going to be able to come up with an eminent decision, they'll just say that.
Very good. So Ezra is capturing what a lot of the Rishonim seem to think, which is that, as we'll see, Kol Dalam Gvar, they conceptualize as what's called a siluk. It's not a psak. It's best in just letting everyone else deal with it. Meaning, it's not that we're pursuing justice, but that we're not going to pursue it. We're not going to pursue a decision when we don't think we can weigh in truthfully. We'd rather leave it to everyone else to figure out, but we're not pursuing truth, but we can't actively pursue a decision in which we're not sure that we can avoid injustice, and therefore we just have to let it be. Right? That is how many Rishonim, as we'll see, will conceptualize called the Olam Gvar. Shuda de Daine, what about Shuda de Daine? So we don't know exactly what it means yet, but the judges are going to make a decision which is not based on proof, let's say. We'll see what they do base their decision on. It's going to be a machloket, but right, again, that's the case where the two people both got their star on the same day. There doesn't seem to be any real answer, so should the dini make a decision, right? So that is definitely prioritizing. If I had to pick the three, which is it prioritizing? I would say the third, life. Meaning, just make a decision, right? Peace, maybe, depends on what decision he comes with. Truth, we'll see. Maybe, depends how arbitrarily he's a man allowed to make his decision. We'll see that that's a machlokes could be shown him. How arbitrary is his decision allowed to be? It's clearly somewhat arbitrary, but can it be completely arbitrary or not is a machloket. So that's Kol Dalam Gvar Yachloku. Shuda Dedaine and Munach Achayavo Eliyahu, where, what about Munach Achayavo Eliyahu? As we said, that seems to give up on life, meaning it's just going to stay frozen forever, but...
Not
fine, until Eliyahu, but for, you know, that could be, you know, past the expiration date for the litigants here. Presumably, if they can hold on to it forever... I know, Kat, that you're wet and cold. Yes, the special Eliyahu vault. All these things he has to decide when he comes to herald the Mashiach. All these the judges will say, listen, It's very nice Mashiach's coming, but we have like 23,000 cases that we need you just to resolve, if you don't mind. Yes, this apple which has been rotting for 7 centuries, right? This coat which has been out of style since Richard the Lionheart, you know, whatever, I don't know, right? Yeah. But the other two, right, meaning again, like Ezra said, it seems to be vacating the decision. It doesn't want to pursue injustice. Peace, I don't know, maybe it's peaceful, maybe it's not. I'm not really sure this creates peace or frustration, unclear to me. But more or less, right, these different mechanisms seem to be balancing in different ways these factors, okay? Fine. So that's the first sort of overview, right? Again, this will take us a little bit of time to do this properly. Okay. Just leave the cat. Leave the cat. Okay. That's the next thing we have to do, though, is we need to figure out why anyone would endorse these, and specifically in our Gemara, why you would endorse one position over the other for the specific, right? This is the overall. But remember, in our sugya, this is brought up to figure out which case is Ze'omer Shel Avotai, is Ze'omer Shel Avotai most similar to choose which mechanism we're going to use, which means that you got to figure out two things, or a few things. One is the source case, right? Because in each case, the Gemara says, isn't Ze'omer Shel Avotai Ze'omer Shel Avotai similar to Hamachlev Para V'Chamor, right? Shud D'Dinayni, the two Shtarot. So what is the principle driving that case? Why does the Gemara think they're similar? And then in each stage of the Gemara, why does the Gemara think that they're different? Right, again, let's structurally, just so it's clear, because this is complicated, right? The Gemara in each case, what does it do? Right? It says, Kol Dalem Gvar, why Kol Dalem Gvar? Isn't it similar to the case of Machle Parva Chamor, where there is itself a Machloket, whether it's Yachloku, or, first it does Shnei Shari Yotam Yachad, where itself there's a machloket, shudda d'dani or yachloku, which means that you have to work backwards. First of all, what? The two shtarot, right? So what you have to do is, first of all, you're going to have to figure out the machlokes of Rav and Shmuel in the case of two shtarot. Why would one say yachloku and one say shudda d'dani, right? You're going to have to figure out that. Then what's the second methodological move you're going to have to do? Why did the Gemara think that that case, Yachloku or Shudda D'Dayne, was a better fit for Ze'omer Shel Avotai? Ze'omer Shel Avotai, that they wanted to prefer whatever resolution was in the Shnei Shtarot case, which is itself a Machloket, but the Gemara clearly preferred either of those in its Havamina to what it actually said, which was called Alangvar. Right? So you see how complicated already this is going to have to be. They're going to have to figure out, again, in the Shtarot case, why does Rav say Yachloku and Shmuel say Shudda D'Dayne? And why did the Gemara and Havamina think that either of those resolutions was better than Kol Dalem Gvar? And why in the Metzgana is that not the case? And that answer is going to be hidden in these words, Ika or Leka Lamekim Ala Demilta. Whatever that means. Right? That's going to be the first methodological move. Then you're going to have to say, why in its Havamina did the Gemara think that it was similar to Machlev Para V'Chamor, where the solution endorsed is Yachloku? What's the Maskana that it's not, such that Kol Dalem Gvar is better than Yachloku? And the solution is what the Gemara calls Drara D'Mamona. What does Drara D'Mamona mean? Right, so again, in each case, what you got to do is figure out the source case, why the mechanism chosen is the one there. What was the Havamina that case was a good model for the case of Ze'omer Shel Avotai V'Ze'omer Shel Avotai? And then, why does the Gemara reject the comparison? and endorse Kol Del and Gvar instead. Yes? Right? Everyone agree methodologically that that's what we have to do? Yes? We're clear? Okay. So let us work backwards here methodologically then, okay? So the first thing that we have to do is, the Gemara first suggested, Ze Omer Shavotai, Ze Omer Shavotai, Kol Del and Gvar. Okay? Now, first things first. Before we even compare to Shuda Dedaini, look at this very fascinating comment of the Rashbam. And the Rashbam says, what does it mean, Kol Del and Gvar? Bain birayot, bain bekoach. Kamo shepozik Rav Nachman lefaneinu Kol Del and Gvar. What does that mean? Yes. Either by force or with proof. Meaning? Yes. So the Rashbam seems to have two very different possibilities of what Kol Del and Gvar means. It can either mean literally a fight to the death, or it can mean prove it. Maybe. Right, maybe. I do want to point out there's one more big methodological move we're going to have to do, right? And that is, this should have been obvious, it is obvious, but I have to just spell it out, right? In addition to figuring out the Havamina and the Maskana of the Gemara of why it is comparable to Shuda Dedaini case, Shtei Shtarot, or Machabar Bachamor, Tosfos asks the obvious question, which is, why does the Gemara not even invoke the other Mamana Muta Basafe cases? Meaning, why isn't Ze Omer Shavotai the Ze Omer Shavotai compared by the Gemara to Shnayim Ochsin Betalot, Ze Omer Kula Shali, Ze Omer Kula Shali? Doesn't that seem to be a pretty similar model? I mean, once the Gemara is looking at all the other Mamana Muta Basafe cases, why, right, we have to ask why the Gemara does think it's a good comparison to Shnei Shtar Yotzim Biyon Echad and Machla Parav HaChamor, and why does the Gemara reject it? But Tosfos asks the question, which is, why does the Gemara, even if it is Havamina, not bother comparing it to Shnayim Ochsin Betalot, to holding Betalot, right? So, right, you have to not just ask, why does the Gemara compare it to the cases it doesn't reject it? Why does the Gemara not even bother comparing it to some of the cases it doesn't compare it to? Say it again? Ah, very good. So I wasn't sure exactly what order I wanted to do this in, but Ezra starts us off by being mechaven to Tosfos, right? The first move that Tosfos makes in this sugya is to deal with Ezra's question, which is, okay, right, Tosfos says, before I ask why the Gemara does compare to Shnei Shtarot, I got to figure out why the Gemara had no Hava Amina, that this was similar to what sounds like, superficially, the most similar case, which is Zelmer Kula Shali, Vizelmer Kula Shali. So, without even having seen Tosfos yet, or maybe he did see it, but I don't think he did yet. So good, so even better, you're Machavein. Ezra was Machavein to the Gadol of the Balei HaTosfos, the sharpest of all of them, who is Rabbeinu Tam. Right, Rabbeinu Tam. Where Rabbeinu Tam says, V'im tomar ma'ishna mishnayim, look at Tosfos Hu Arba. Hadin kol dolem gvar. V'im tomar ma'ishna mishnayim ochzen betalit, domar v'resh bava metziah diyachloku. Why didn't the Gemara compare it to its most similar case? U'mifaresh Rabbeinu Tam de ochzen shinei. When people are holding on to it physically, it's different. The chayvon sheshnehem muchzakin, Because since the two of them are holding on to it, Ein lanu lehaniach sheyigzal la'echad lechaveiro. We can't let one steal from the other. Dechashiv ki'ilu anu yodin sheyish l'shneihem chelek ba. It's as if we know that each of them has a portion in it. Shekol davar yish lahamid becheskat mishu biyado. Because in halacha, we assume that that which you are holding is yours. Like in the case of Rabbi Abba's ingot of bar of precious metal, an ingot, I think that's the English word, the afag of the amar didi chatvi chashvin legazlon, where we see him steal. And he claims, I stole it, but that's because it was mine. I was just reclaiming mine. We treat him as a gazlon. And we have to treat it with certainty as the one who held on it, who was holding on to it originally. Okay, so let's unpack Rabbeinu Tam's answer. Rabbeinu Tam says, we cannot compare it to the Yachloku case of Shnayim Ochsin Betalit, because there's a fundamental conceptual difference. And what is it, Ezra?
Neither of them are they're not holding the land or better, so none of them, like, that makes it so they automatically have a couple of things to it, so.
What?
It's not possible because we don't have, to accept them. We could just say, look, one of them may not have anything to it at all.
Therefore?
If they don't have a claim to it, then I guess they're able to choose that. If they don't have a claim to it, then it's not, as much of a miscarriage of justice.
Okay, so let's spell it out, right? Exactly. So, what is Rabbeinu Tam saying? I want you to see how Rabbeinu Tam is dealing with these principles that we talked about. What is he saying? Listen. He says, Kol Doling Var, in the end of the day, really risks a miscarriage of justice. But why is it legitimate for us to let Rami and Adam fight it out to the death? We can't necessarily do better, but more importantly for Rabbeinu Tam is because, but why are we allowed to do that? So he says, look, it's a field, right? Let's take our case, it's a field, which means that Rami and Adam are yelling over the field and saying, it's mine, whatever, right? From the court's perspective, do they have to get involved? No, because at that moment, no one's holding the land. They're just making claims. And therefore, even though it might turn out to be a miscarriage of justice, it might be that one of them will win simply because he's stronger, in the end of the day, Bezdin was never involved. They weren't holding it. We don't have to defend anybody's rights, because from the vantage point of court, nobody has rights. Right? No one has proven their right. They're claiming they have rights. But it is there. So you want to fight it out? It's not great, because justice may not be served, but we're also not facilitating injustice. But when two people come to court holding it in their hands, the default is that whatever you hold, court has to treat it as yours until proven otherwise, which means if we let you fight it out, what would happen? If the stronger person managed to steal it from the weaker person, that's on the court. Because when they came to court, the weaker one was still holding 50%. So we can't encourage you to fight it out when, from the vantage point of court, you have a claim. Right? So we'll see that the Mefarshim will really push in this point. But is Kol Da'on Gvar a psak? Right? In London's terminology, they say, is it a psak or a siluk? Right? Is it an active decision, or is Beis Din choosing to vacate? Right? Recuse themselves, exactly. And it sounds like Rabbeinu Tam is saying, they're recusing themselves. They're saying, listen, if nobody has any claim as far as the court is concerned, so then we can recuse ourselves, because from our vantage point, no one has any claim to it at all. So fight it out, do what you want. we don't have to get involved because we're not going to facilitate an untruth, and this is not really an injustice that we have to worry about because at this point no one has a claim. But if you come in holding it, so we have to at least as our starting assumption assume that you have a right to whatever is in your hands. We can't then impose the law of the jungle, right, on you because then we're responsible. And we can never be party directly to injustice. We can recuse ourselves and let injustice happen. But if we can't recuse ourselves because you're both holding it, we have to get involved. And we have to get involved, so then we can't just let you fight it out. We have to make a decision. What decision are we going to make? So there, maybe yachloku, where it's the best of all possible decisions. Right, but that's what Rabbeinu Tam says. He says this is not like Shnayim Ochsin. Because what's unique about this case that allows us to turn it over to Kol Don Lugvar, to the law of the jungle, is that the court has a right to vacate. Because nobody has a claim from their point of view. So we can allow a miscarriage of justice to happen, but outside of court. But when you're holding it, we have to respond. We can't let an injustice happen under our auspices, and we have to get involved. Once we get involved, so-called long virus isn't an option. Then we have to figure out the other mechanisms. But he says, Rabbeinu Tam says, that's why this is fundamentally different than the case of Shnayim Ochsin B'Talit. Right? Now again, following Rav Moshe's model, this makes a lot of sense. Right? Which is, look, Kol Don Lugvar is helpful in the sense that it doesn't make Beis Din explicitly paskin something that's probably not true. So if they have an option to avoid untruth, that's great. But they can't do that when there's already a seeming raya from their vantage point that each party owns something. Because now, letting them fight it out is them facilitating an injustice. We'll see. 1 second. But therefore, so what is Yachloku? Look, we need to facilitate some sort of decision. And at this point, it's likely that it's going to be untrue. Right? So now, but we have to do something, so Yachloku will choose peace. Right? But we don't need to do that if we could just vacate from it, because then we don't have to be poge in truth. If you already have a claim, so truth is probably going to get hurt. Right? So fine, we'll have to get involved, and then maybe we'll make a compromise. But we don't have to get involved, so we can prefer truth, right? But seemingly in a negative sense, right? And this is where you see the sharper distinction, which is one way of looking at Golem Gvar is that the court doesn't want to be involved in an untruth. We'll see that the Rush is actually going to think, isn't going to want to swallow this at all. He's not going to be willing to swallow this. He's going to say, no, Kol Don Lugvar is only legitimate if you think it doesn't just not facilitate an untruth, but it actually facilitates truth. Why? So we'll see, but the Rush is going to say something shocking, right? The Rush is going to have this fascinating position, which is... What? No, we're going to see. He's going to say, but I want to see it inside, that, not God, but that the people who are not lying will be more motivated, yes. And therefore, this is a way of revealing truth, right? Which is problematic. But okay. But I think we're going to have to stop here. But the first point, which Ezra got exactly right, nailed it, was that why is this not like Shnayim Ochsin B'Talit? Is because Kol Don Lugvar allows us to vacate because no one seems to have a claim. And therefore, we can choose decisions that prevent us from having to pursue possible injustice in a way where we can when people actually already have a claim. Then Beis Din has to respond. Once you have to respond, there's a good likelihood that you're going to get it wrong when you have no proof. But you need to respond. Once you need to respond, and you might not get the truth anyways, so then you can start balancing shalom. That always works. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. Well, we're going to see. That's exactly what the Rishonim are going to try to figure out. Some Rishonim don't want to think even of Yachloku as a possible lie, but we'll see.